You know, the enemy wants to steal things. He's real good at it. He's pretty relentless at it. And so we got one of those challenging blesses. We breed golden retrievers. We've been doing that for about 18 years. And the dog was due today. So we set up a C-section for Friday because she had a lot of puppies and we didn't want to lose anyone to take care. And she thought she didn't feel like having a C-section. So she started giving birth on Wednesday. And we weren't ready. And so we had 12. We didn't have 12. She had 12. That's like telling me my wife, we had 6 kids, you know, or something. She's like, you didn't have any. I've been getting up at 3 a.m. every morning because the first 4 weeks, they are 24/7 that you have to watch. So I'm a little fuzzy. But I believe that the message is in this season. It's kind of appropriate. It's called Extravagant Gifts. And there's things I want us to just learn and understand that I really think the devil tries to steal. I'm believing God's going to be God, and I just have to be Dave. That's my whole part, which is really cool because he's a lot better at his part. So, what the world considers extravagant gifts, you can actually Google that. You can look up extravagant gifts in history. And the first one is this guy. I just love this. This guy, Roman Abramovich, he's a Russian oligarch. And he gave his girlfriend a $14 billion statue of himself. No, I'm serious. Now, what really kills me is I still don't get this. It's a bronze sculpture. How much bronze can be worth $14 billion? You can make a solid gold statue and it's not worth. But it's a $14 billion statue of himself. He also gave her $120 million in paintings, but who cares? You know, that's nothing. You can find out they'll give you a $60 million jet that this guy gave his wife. And if you're elbowing your husband, forget it. It ain't happening unless I got a matchbox, you know. $60 million jet. There's an $80 million yacht that the brother gave his wife. I guess there was some kind of competition there. We have, I like this one, a watch by Chopard. I'm not even saying I'm saying that right. It's valued at $20 million. You know, I got a $48 Timex I've had for a long time. And you know what? I bet you it keeps time just as well. You know, I'd be afraid someone's going to cut my wrist off and take the watch. $20 million. You can go down this list. There's the top 10. There's the top 15. And everything is out of the extravagance. But all of those gifts are out of their excess. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. We're gonna stop so we can make nice and not make it.
There we go. That'll make it easier. So, I wanted to look at God's definition of extravagant gifts because he's got them in the Bible. And it really is a great thing for us. I just put down a few of these things, but I looked at Abraham. Abraham's first extravagant gift, you think about this in Genesis 12, 1 through 4. And it starts out and it just says, and now the Lord spoke to Abraham. Now the Lord said to Abraham. It doesn't say anywhere else that God ever talked to Abraham before. It's not like I talk to you again. And now that you know my voice, I'm going to tell you this incredible thing. I want you to leave your home. I want you to leave your family. I want you to journey to a land that I'm not even going to tell you where it is. And I'm going to give you a promise that you're not even going to understand. It makes no sense. You're 75 years old. No, I'm just going to start out and tell you this. So Abraham's first extravagant gift was obedience. See, that's extravagant to God. Obedience is a foundational gift, but it's a big deal to God. And that's really cool because we can do that. And he says to him, now, one of the things I want you to catch in this, because maybe like most of you guys on this side, you guys are looking pretty perfect tonight. The guys in the middle, not so much, sorry. So you know, you may have felt like, you know, I've blown it once or twice, so I may get, you know, kind of knocked out of the running. But the first thing Abraham's told to do is leave your home, leave your family. And who does Abraham take with him? He takes Lot. Lot's a thorn in his side. In fact, he doesn't get the fullness of the promise until him and Lot finally part ways. And then God takes him out and says, look at the stars. So Abraham, even though he offered this amazing gift of this obedience, this absolute trust, this faith in this voice that he heard, he still was just like us. And he blew it. And he blows it again because he gets that promise, you know, I'm going to give you a child. And he's 75 when this starts. I'm not even sure if I want one. Holy smokes. I mean, that's just crazy. But about 15 years into that waiting period, he has a child by Hagar. Yeah, he's just like us, guys. Sometimes you get that call, you get that direction, you get that pushing from the Lord. And somewhere along the way, maybe we stop. Maybe we try and help God out. You know, and we mess up. And we think, man, is he frustrated? Probably. Can he even be angry? Because there's a righteous anger. Yeah, he can be. Does he love you less? No. Does it disqualify you from being able to give other gifts? No. And so there's this, this gift. And then we come to the ultimate extravagant gift that Abraham gives. Because God wakes him up and says, sacrifice Isaac. You may have that dream. You may have that thing that you've been waiting for years. And you even know it's from God. And it starts to happen. That promise starts to come. That job, that relationship, that whatever it is, that you feel like God's finally fulfilling that promise in my life. And he says, can I have it? And you preached just the other, a little bit ago about the next morning. The next morning. I don't know what he thought about all night. I don't know if he slept. It doesn't say. But the next morning he got up to fulfill that command of God. That's an extravagant gift. God may do that to you. In fact, it's, we don't look at it that way, but if God would do that to you, that's a privilege. Because that means he's trusting you at a deeper level. And he's saying, I can ask for your Isaac because I believe you'll give him to me. No money. Abraham didn't make a $14 billion statue of himself. But it was an extravagant gift. And then we have some other ones here. The widow of Zarephath. Now, there's all these little things that you don't... That's not an Israelite area. He had to go outside of Israel. You remember later, when Jesus reminds them of how Elijah fed this widow, they were going to stone him because they were ticked off that he talked about treating a non-Israelite so well. So this was not an Israelite woman. So there's a real good chance she didn't know who Elijah was. And he comes and he says, can I have some water? And she's like, okay, you know, I'll give you some water. He said, well, make me a little bread too. And she says, I'm gathering some sticks. I got a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil. I'm going to make some bread for me and my son, and we're going to die. I think that's fairly clear that things aren't going well. We're going to eat this. We're going to die. And I always thought this was the most audacious statement ever made in the Bible. Okay, but make me bread first. Say what? I just oh my gosh. Did you just not hear me? I can just picture my wife like, pwah! Just like, you know, bam! Sorry. Anyway, but I just, it's such an amazing thing. And she does. He makes a promise. He said, it'll be well with you. It won't run out. I don't know you. You know, I mean, if somebody on the street tells you that, you're like, thanks. We got enough scams going on. You just want my last meal. But she does. There is this faith that she exhibits in this prophet of God. That's an extravagant gift. For us to use the faith that God has given us to do the works that God has given us. See, what does God actually need from us? It starts with an N. Yeah, ends with an O-T-H-I-N-G. He doesn't need anything. Even our love, and you have to understand that, because the only love I can give to God is the love I got from God, because God is the source of love. So he doesn't actually need anything. It's the only being that ever will exist that is actually self-sufficient. And yet he says, I will give you the opportunity to give gifts that actually matter. That's mind-boggling to me. And if you have kids and they come, Daddy, you look at the picture I drew for you. Yeah, that's a really neat car. That's Mommy. Sorry. No, that's a neat picture of Mommy. You know? And you put it on the refrigerator. You make space for it among all the other new pictures. What matters about the picture? Certainly not the art. It's who gave it. And what it meant to them when they gave it, that's what matters to God. See, that's such a cool thing, because then all of us are qualified to give extravagant gifts. That's a pretty neat thing to me. I know me. I know my failures. You may know yours. God knows more of my failures than I do. And he still says, those gifts matter to me. So look at some of the other people, just the three mighty men of David. Such a cool thing, such a crazy thing. David's sitting there kind of pining away because the Philistines are in Bethlehem. And he's just saying, man, I wish I could get a drink of water from the well at the gate of Bethlehem. And he's three mighty men. That was their title. They were the three mighty men. He had his 30 men, but these were the three mighty men. And they overhear this. And we could do this. And it doesn't say that they snuck in. It said they broke through the lines. Read it. They broke through the lines of the Philistine garrison. So I'm not sure. I keep trying to picture this. It's like two of them swinging swords while the one guy's winding up the well. You know, I'm like, what is going on there? And they bring this water back. Now, I like David's, the intensity of his response, but he says, I'm not going to drink this water. I drink it at the risk of your lives, and he pours it out as an offering. I'd have been ticked if I was them. I'm just being honest. Drink the darn water. But this was a gift of this honor of their king. What you do to honor your leaders, what you do to honor your spouse, what you do to honor your pastors, it matters, because they're put in place by God. And so when you honor them with the right heart, it is an honor to God. They risked their lives to get that water. That was devotion. We can have that same passion, that same, what can I do to serve? Okay, all of the events, there's been a lot of events going on here recently. None of them happen by themselves. That may surprise some of you because you're never there. Whoops. I'm really frustrated because I missed yesterday because I was sure it was next weekend. My wife smacked me. I'm serious, man. I was really bummed because I wanted to hear the brass quartet, quintet. I was psyched. And she goes, yeah, I saw it on Facebook. It was last night. Okay, fine. But this longing to serve, I can organize. I can do give. You can do chairs. You can set up tables. You can, you know, watch kids. You can give. And when you're giving it with that heart, that desire, God, what do I have to bless your kingdom? It becomes an extravagant gift. It's not convenient. It may take more out of me. I may be tired. I may have a busy schedule. I may have to set some. Whatever you have to work out, the more that that involves, God, it doesn't matter. I just want to serve you. That becomes this well-pleasing. Man, you just, when he says that, you know, this comes up as a sweet aroma, this offering. Because I'm pretty sure sometimes it's not a sweet aroma that we're giving off. And he still says, I love you. Let's work this out. The widow's two mites. I'm going to just read that one because Matthew 12, 41 to 44. And he sat down opposite the treasury. I think we were just talking about that. Just there's the offering, and there's Jesus. He said he sat down opposite the treasury and began observing how the people were putting money into the treasury. And many rich people were putting in large sums. And a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which will amount to a cent or a penny. And calling his disciples to them, he said, grab that right there. He didn't call them for anybody else. And these people were coming in. Sometimes they had trumpeters. They actually had people announcing them. Because look what I'm putting in. It became this very religious, look at me thing. And they'd come in and they'd make a big show about dumping their money in. Jesus just sat there. And he sees this widow. Now, you know pretty well, nobody else is seeing this widow. She's non-existent. And Jesus said, hey, come here. Come here, see her? She just gave more than all of them. Now, I'm not real good at math. That's my wife's. But I know the difference between a penny and $1 million. Jesus, I think you're wrong on that one. No, I'm not. Because they gave out of their excess. They gave out of their abundance. They gave because it didn't cost them personally something. She gave everything. There's a story, and it's a great story. They're having a conference, and there's some people at this table, and they're testifying about the provision of God. And the one man stands up. He said, you know, when I was, years ago, I was down and out. I had $12 to my name. That's all I had. I was in the church, and I felt God tell me, just put it all in the offering plate. And I put it all in. And look how God has blessed me. I'm a multimillionaire now, and I'm a big old farming guy. This little lady in the back stood up and said, could you do it again? It's like the rich young man who went to Jesus. What do I need to do? Give it all away to the poor. Come follow me. And he went away sad. She gave everything she had. God said, you know what? In her heart and in her attitude, and in her desire to serve me and honor me, that meant more to me than anything. All the other money given. Because I don't need your money. We're talking about this morning. He created everything that exists. So the gold mine that they're digging the gold out of, it exists because God spoke it into existence. The diamonds, yeah. It's because God spoke it into existence. He doesn't need my green little paper. It just, you know, I'm not laying off any angels. I'm not shutting down a solar system. I don't need it. What I'm looking for is the heart behind it when you give it. Where are you at when you give your tithe or your offerings? The immoral woman, Because there's two, you know, we see this break in the alabaster ointment, but there's two different stories here. Because there's one when it's the nard that Mary gives, and there's another one that's the alabaster, and it's the woman, the immoral woman is how she's called. That's not Mary of Lazarus, Mary. There are two different stories here. And I just want to read this one in Luke 7, starting in verse 36. Now, one of the Pharisees was requesting Jesus to dine with them, and he entered the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And there was a woman in the city who was a sinner. Wow. How'd you like that for your title? Hey, this is Dave the sinner. In fact, they didn't even actually give her name. It's like, hey, this is my friend sinner. But that's how she was identified. That's how she was known, kind of like Rahab, the name that precedes her, Rahab the harlot. Thanks. But this, they didn't even give a name. And when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster vial of perfume, standing behind him at his feet, weeping. She began to wet his feet with her tears and kept wiping them with the hair of her head. I'm sorry, I was sitting there this morning just trying to picture that. Now, Pastor Ronnie, that's tough for you. That's more like a buff and a polish. But ladies, come on, let's deal with reality. Ladies, you treasure your hair. You take care of your hair. You spend lots of money on your hair. You're not going to wipe somebody's dirty, dusty feet with your hair. She wept and washed his feet with tears and just bending down behind him, just hiding behind him, just wiping his feet with her tears. I don't know. I'm thinking, where am I in worship? Where am I in comparison to the abandon that lady had? Because she knew she was going into a Pharisee's house. A leader. She knew she was being condemned and judged. She knew she was being despised. She didn't care. I just want to get, and I'm not trying to get anything from him. I'm not asking him to heal me. I'm not asking him to fix my reputation. I just want to weep at his feet and pour this ointment on his head. And when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of person this woman is who is touching him. She is no name, just sinner. And Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he replied, say it, teacher. A moneylender had two debtors, and one owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they were unable to repay, he graciously forgave them both. So which of them will love him more? Simon answered, I suppose the one who forgave him more. And he said to him, you have judged correctly. And turning around to the woman, he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house and you gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but she, since the time I came in, has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil. But she anointed my feet with perfume. That's because she wasn't even going to stand up in his presence and get to his head. She just said, I'm just going to anoint his feet. For this reason, I say to you, her sins, which are many, have been forgiven. For she loved much, but he who's forgiven little loves little. And then he said to her, your sins have been forgiven. Go about the rest of that whole story. But there was God's response to her extravagant gift. Everybody else still only knows you as sinner. They don't even know your name. But I'm telling you, I just made you my daughter. Your sins are forgiven. I don't need perfume on my feet. I don't need your tears on my feet. I don't need you wiping him with your hair. I'm not even sure how efficient that is. But what I needed was your heart. That heart is an extravagant gift. And And the funny part is, you know what? If you've messed up more, you think you've messed up more than average, God says, I'm going to make it so you love me more than average. I'm the God who restores. I do things that are impossible in the world. Everybody else still knows you as sinner. But I know you as forgiven. I know you as child of God. I know you as one who can give gifts that please the King of Kings. You're not disqualified. And then there's Mary. When Jesus was at the house, Jesus therefore said, this is such a cool thing, because I'm looking up in a concordance and trying to find the passage and the whole thing, and it's mentioned in John 11, but it doesn't happen till John 12. It's almost like, hey, look what's coming. Look what's coming. I'm going to tell you this story, because this is such a cool thing. And so you can look it up in the first four verses of John 11, or this is actually where the event takes place here in John 12. Jesus, therefore, 6 days before the Passover came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they made him a supper there. And Martha was serving. Now, I also want to take a little caveat, a little bunny trail there. Martha didn't get rebuked for serving. Okay, I have a sermon I want to preach one time called Be an M&M. And no, it's not the candy. Be an M&M. Because be Martha and Mary. Because you can sit at his feet, but you're going to be hungry afterwards. Somebody needed to prepare the meal. He didn't get rebuked because she was working. She got rebuked for her attitude. So when she fixed her attitude, her serving was very important. Martha was serving here. And Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table. But Mary then took a pound of very costly perfume of pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus. And she also wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples who was intending to betray him, said, why has this perfume not been sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor people? Now you find out that he didn't care about the poor people. He had the money bag, and he was stealing from the money bag regularly. But there's this difference. Mary didn't care. Now, first of all, the reason it's kind of neat to know is the 300 denarii is basically like a year of salary. Yeah, ooh. How many of you are ready to give a year's salary for a moment at Jesus' feet? Because there's all kinds of calculators that go off. You know, how fast do I get evicted? You know, what's going on with my, when they're going to repossess the car? I mean, there's all these logical things. And God doesn't say not to be logical, does he? Spiritual doesn't mean illogical, but it's the priority. When my logic takes place or precedence over what God is saying to do, then I've messed up. But in this case, a year's salary just to pour this perfume on him and to weep and be in his presence. What are you and I willing to spend? Be that intimate. What gift do I want to bring? The extravagant. So in looking at these, I just wanted to, you know, kind of look at what is an extravagant gift in God's eyes. And some of the things are that it requires faith. Hebrews 11:6, it's impossible to please God without faith. Faith is that trust and that belief in that one that is bigger than I am. That becomes the driving motivation or determining factor in my life. For us, and again, if God doesn't need anything from you, then why bother with extravagant gifts? It's for our benefit. When we went to go to the mission field, God did some things in our life because we, you know, in the littleness that we had, we did what he said, and he showed up, and ever since, you can't take that away from me. That, the things that he did personally, he didn't do them for the church, he didn't do them for the ministry that we were going to, he did them for my family. God became that much more personal. And all we were trying to do was just obey. And God said, okay, I'm going to show myself. It was like Moses saying, look, if you're pleased with me, if you're telling me you're for me, then let me see your glory. Now, I didn't have a Moses experience, but I had a Dave experience where God showed up and said, see what I can do? See what you don't have? We had 27% of the money that we needed, monthly support. Now, we had 27% and we had 100% of people being against us. And I mean that, my parents are good Christian people. My in-laws were good Christian people. And they were like, what are you doing? You're leaving this job with Delta Airlines and you're taking your four boys and you're going to a third world country to live in a tent. That doesn't make any sense. I'm like, yeah, so far you're right. But I know what God said. And God said, let me show up at 11:59. Because I was telling them this morning when we got on the plane, because I could write the tickets because I worked for Delta, and I wrote tickets for us. We went from Florida to New York to Alaska to Seattle to Hong Kong to Manila. And I did it so we could see family going along. And when we got to Seattle, my father-in-law called, and he said, more than all of the rest of the money came in those 7 days. And God just... And it really was like God just going, see? See? I got this. You do your part. I will count it as an extravagant gift. And I'll do my part. But it requires faith. Because if I can already picture it, if I can already work out the numbers, if I can already make it logical, then I didn't need God. But I need. I need to see my need. I need to see that this one's impossible. If you don't show up, it's not happening. And God's like, good. Good, you got that. You need that part for you to be excited when I do show up. For you to tuck it in your heart. That was David saying, I remind myself. When he was running. Man, he's running for his life, and he wasn't running for his life for a couple of months. He ran for his life for years. I am sure someone there is like, man, did Samuel anoint the right guy? Like, did we miss this? Did God change his mind? Because all I've spent my life running from Saul. Is this really right? He said, no, I remind myself of the goodness and the promises of God. The things that you get to remind yourself of that matter the most is, yeah, I want to read these stories. They're there for us. They're there for us to understand the nature of God. But more importantly, I want to know the ones that just were Dave, or Dave and Deb, or the COVID clan, where it's like, this one was ours. You did this, and it has my name written all over it. And that's what God wants to do to you. He says, you give me that extravagant gift. You put that piece of paper on the refrigerator. Go ahead. That little funny thing, you know, that little drawing. Yeah, give it to me. I don't care about the drawing. I just want your heart. I just want your faith. Another thing that really matters is the attitude of worship in your heart when you give it. That, look, God's so incredibly gracious that you can tithe with a lousy attitude. Now, I know that's a terrible thing. We shouldn't, but we can, because it was still obedience. God's okay with that because he needs to work it out in you. Sometimes the obedience has to get ahead of the emotions. All right? They catch up eventually. But in the beginning, it's like, here's your tithe. Here's your tithe, God. And I'm like, fine. And he's like, okay. In a while, you'll understand that it was the silliest thing you did was to try and hold it back from me. But I'm okay with that. I'll take the obedience first. But at some point, the extravagant gift has this heart of worship behind it. I don't have much, God. But it's yours. And I wish I had more to give. And if I've got more that I don't know about, show me what it is. Because you have talents. And the talents described in the Bible, that's not money. That might be how you handle money for some people, for a few people, because it says not many are wealthy. For most people that are wealthy, it's a trap. It's a problem. I always blame my wife. That's why we're poor, because it would be a trap to her. I was sure. No, you know what? It's like, you know, those that would, it's in Timothy, Paul's talking to Timothy, those that would be rich. In other words, that's the passion. That's the hunger. He said they pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So the talents, that's not your money. That's the giftings that God gave you. Maybe you have, maybe you're good in compassion. Maybe you're good in hosting. Maybe you're good in listening. All of those things really matter to someone, and actually multiple someones at different times. I used to do, remember you need to go, hey, how you doing? And someone would say, well, you got an hour to listen, you know. In other words, I'm kind of blowing you off. I'm not doing well, but I'm not really going to blow you. And it's like, nah, you got an hour to listen? And I had a person in our college choir, and she said that to me, and I said, I got all day. What's going on? It didn't take her like seconds. She was just crying. Because she said, nobody's listening. Nobody cares. You have people like that in your life. And sometimes it's accentuated in this season where everybody's supposed to be happy and everything's supposed to be great. And it just highlights to them how much it's not. And you're just loving on them can be an extravagant gift to God. I'm busy. I've got things to do. I have plans. I have desires. Is that the person you want me to listen to? Is that the door that you're opening? Okay, I'm going to be late for this, or I'm not going to get to do that, or I'm not going to get to watch this. And it doesn't matter. If this is a gift that I have from you, God, I want to give it back to you. And you can impact somebody's eternity with nothing more than listening. See, that's it. Again, just a reminder, Ephesians 2:10, that he created good works for us to do. He didn't need them. He had to actually create them for us. But he looked at you and he said, oh, okay, yeah, you know what? I got this for her. And I'm gonna set this up and I'm going to orchestrate this. And, oh, you? No, you're different. No, it's not the same gift. I'm going to set this up for you. I'm going to set this up. Such an amazing thing. Such an amazing gift that he gives to us to be able to do something. It requires obedience. It requires humility. These are things that are required in the extravagant gifts. And the closer you draw to God, the easier, truth is, the closer you really draw to God, not academically, or theologically, but the closer you draw to God, the easier it is to be humble because you realize who you are and you realize who he is. And you think, oh my gosh, you still want to use me. You still have plans for me. You still have desires for me to be a blessing to you. I think one of the things that was noted in these people that we were looking at is not wanting anything in return. What's my motivation? Well, there's business transactions. We do something to get something. It's not necessarily wrong. Okay, but that's a business transaction. That's not a heart transaction. When I get down to the heart transactions, when I get down to trying to emulate Jesus, he gave without any guarantee of receiving anything. In fact, he knew that most likely, I mean, he knew how he was going to die. So he knew that at the entirety of his life, at the end of it, he was going to be rejected. And still, he gave. I mean, it is the most extravagant gift because it was given twice. Because the Father gave, but the Son also had to give. They gave the same life, but they both had to give it in a different way. I can't picture in any way, shape, I can't picture ever being willing to sacrifice one of my kids. It doesn't register. It doesn't. I can't picture asking one of my kids to be willing to sacrifice themselves. But both of them gave this, knowing that most of the world would reject him. For God so loved the world that he gave. That's extravagant gifts. He didn't give money. He gave himself. That's the prime example. You are the extravagant gift. You're the living epistle. That's what we talked about, written on us. You're the living testimony of God. You're the extravagant gift. And man, too many times I shut it up in the closet. I've got Dave's agenda. I gotta do Dave's things. I gotta go to work. And yeah, you can go to work, but you can be God at work. Oh, I gotta make these numbers. I gotta make these deadlines. I gotta get this truck fixed. I gotta get this out on the road. And all of a sudden, the end of the day is there, and I'm like, did I even remotely offer God any kind of gift while I was here today? What's the gift that you're longing to give? See, that's part of the extravagant, that what's in my heart. It's, God, let me give a gift to you today. Is that how we wake up? I'm alive today for your glory. I'm alive today because you decided I was worth that much to keep me here on the earth to be a blessing to you, to highlight who you are. I still get another chance to give a gift, because then it says that we're going to, that day when that opportunity is done, when we no longer have the chance to give gifts anymore, then we will stand there and give account. This is what I did with what you gave me. That you don't want to go there with nothing in your hands. You know, you want to have a wheelbarrow behind you or bigger. Just go, man, God, I was so thankful. I was so blessed. I was so grateful for you saving me, for you restoring me, for you blessing me, that this is what I did to say thank you. And that's what you're going to want to hear. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your salvation. That's what he wants. And it's such a cool thing again. I just want to remind you that it's not our past. Our past does not prevent us from being an extravagant gift today and tomorrow and however many days you have after that. Abraham failed. First thing he did when he heard God was fail. He partially obeyed. Okay, that's sin. And yet God still. And then he failed again. And God still. And maybe you have failed and failed and failed and failed. But God. Two most amazing words ever. But God. God's not done. You're still breathing. God's not done. And he says, come repent. Come turn. We talked about repent, turning away. Turn. Let's get it fixed. Let's get going. Let's move on. But I know my thoughts for you. Like David, man, cleanse me and I will be white as snow. God, if you do it, it's done. If you failed, God says, I can make you as white as snow. I can restore. I can forgive. I can set right. And then I can let you be one that brings extravagant gifts. The immoral woman doesn't get like a whole much more of a failure culturally than to be known only as the immoral woman or the sinner. And yet God of all the things he could have put in that Bible, he put her. Same way he put Rahab. And so, you know, you talk about, there's in James 2, when he's going to talk about faith without works is dead, two people that he mentions in James 2, Abraham and Rahab the harlot. Like, really, God? Are you kidding me? No, I'm not kidding you. I don't want you to ever forget that you could be Rahab the harlot. You could be as ostracized and as full of sin, and yet I'm God. And I can make it so you can be mentioned in that hall of faith, that you can be mentioned as the extravagant gift giver.